promised him he'll only be under 3 hours, so you guys are safe.
Get settled here so I can get all comfortable.
Well, as he said, my name is Mary Rathke, and I am very honored to be here, and I'm very thankful for those who have organized the event. I know how much time and effort goes into these events, and it's for such a wonderful cause, so thank you very much. I am from Northern Michigan, but I have recently moved to Bay City, Michigan but it's been about 9 years. My husband's a dentist, and he has a business in Bay City, and I have 4 children. I'm very active in the community, and with sharing my story in the pro-life arena, it's taken me many places in the last 2 years. I've been invited to Italy to attend the Leadership Conference for International Pro-Life Leaders. I've also been asked to attend press conferences here in Michigan, and I've been on Dr. Dobson's radio show with other members from a group that I'm a part of called Save the One. Save the One is a group that looks out for the least of these in the pro-life arena, basically the exceptions, those conceived in rape, those conceived in incest, and those that have in utero poor diagnosis. And I'm on the board there, and I'm also on the board of a nonprofit called Help People, and we're creating a dream center, and I raise a lot of money for our local homeless shelter and active in my church and a lot of other areas. So, but the reason why I'm here is to tell you about my life story, and it actually begins in Germany over 100 years ago. My adopted mother's parents got married at the turn of the century, and they tried to have children, and they couldn't. And so after about 2 years, they finally decided to adopt a little girl. So adoption's always been in the family. And after 2 years of having her, my grandparents got pregnant. And they got pregnant. And they got pregnant. And they got pregnant. And they got pregnant again. And my adopted mother, Ursula, who's from Germany, is actually the youngest of 14 children. And she was their last child. And I remember her telling me how even at that time, they did have the opportunity to do some sort of abortions. The midwives knew how to do that. And she'd always ask her father, you know, you had an opportunity to stop having children. Why did you have me? And he looked at her and he said, I'd rather have a baby on my pillow than forever on my heart. And he understood that lifelong consequence of that choice. Now, Ursula grew up in Germany. And she was about 12 years old when World War II broke out. Hopefully I'm not getting my math wrong here, so nobody figured out. Because when she was about 17 years old, she met an American soldier. The Americans had made it to her village at that point. And this man had grown up in America. He was an American soldier, but his parents were from Germany. So he spoke the language, and he came over and would have a beer with the family and got to know her. She was real pretty and wanted to marry her. So it took them about 2 years for her to sneak out because she was on the east side, which Russia had kind of taken over. And she went up to Berlin, and at that time the wall wasn't up yet, and so she stayed with cousins and actually snuck out on a Red Cross plane and made it to America. So she made it to America, and she married him, and she's thinking, of course, that this is her, like, fairy tale story. The Americans came in and saved the day, and they'd always heard these wonderful things about America and the movies, and Elvis Presley was so popular then, and she's going to America. She was so proud of herself and so excited. The only problem was she didn't realize, because of the 2-year correspondence with writing letters, that her now husband was a severe alcoholic, and he had a lot of obviously issues with his alcoholism, and it affected her and the family. But before you know it, she found herself, she has 5 children, and with the era and not having any family at the time, she just thought, you're married, you stay with your family, you're there for the kids. And so she was living her life. It wasn't quite the fairy tale she had hoped for, but she was married and had these 5 kids, and so the kids became her world. And one summer day, they got in their car and they headed up for a family vacation. And she had been kind of having a bad feeling about it. And she thought, well, maybe we shouldn't go this year. So she had asked her husband, Hank, at the time, let's not go. And he, of course, was like, nope, I've already scheduled the time off of work. I want to take you and the kids. Let's go on a vacation. And so the whole way she's driving, she thought they were going to have a car accident because she just had such a bad feeling. So I'm sure she was a horrible backseat driver. She's probably yelling, stop, watch what you're doing. And she's watching frantically to make sure that nothing's going to hit them. Of course, this is before car seats and before seat belts are standard. And her youngest is 11 months old, and her oldest is 11 years old. Well, thankfully, they made it. They made it up to the same place they had been before, and it's the cabins. And she thought, well, you know, she had such a bad feeling. She said, well, if we go to the same place and we have that same cabin we have last year, I'll feel better about it. So he said, okay, and he arranged it, made sure they had that same cabin. And that evening when they began to shut the windows to keep the bugs out, and it was starting to get cold, her and the children and her husband began getting ill. And they were having headaches, and they were vomiting, and I'm sure many of you can imagine what was going on. They had a new refrigerator installed the day before, and at that time it was run on gas, and it had a leak. And the last thing she remembers is calling for her older daughter, Nancy, because, see, Nancy didn't eat the tuna salad that she had prepared for the ride up. And so she thought, oh, the tuna and the mayonnaise and the car, it went bad, and we're all just got food poisoning. So she thought, I'll call for Nancy and she'll go get help. Well, Nancy never came, and help didn't come until the next morning when the owner of the place realized that they weren't up yet. That was very odd for them. Usually the boys and the husband were out fishing by now. The doors and windows would all be open and the girls would be playing, skipping rope in the street at this point, and they weren't up. So she woke up about 3 days later in the hospital, and when she asked where her children were, they said that they were with the angels. She did have one son who survived. He was 4 years old, and a cousin that just happened to be along for that trip. But she lost three of her daughters. So you can imagine that the bad marriage obviously got worse. If you're already an alcoholic and four of your five children are gone, you don't stop drinking typically. It usually gets worse. And so she did end up getting a divorce. She ended up remarrying a man by the name of Sarah, and they tried having more children. I think she wanted to fill that void of losing all those babies. And unfortunately, they just suffered miscarriage after miscarriage, and they were unable to have any more children. So they ended up moving up to northern Michigan, to Kalkaska. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that town. And they bought a restaurant. She had worked really hard in different restaurants, and his parents had always owned a restaurant. So they went up there, and they thought, okay, you know, she's older now. She's pushing 50, and thought, it's time to move on. The kids are gone. I've got a new husband. Her son that was four at the time, when he turned 18, he moved to Kalkaska, and he became a chef in the restaurant. And this is her new fairy tale. She's in America. She's a business owner, and she's got this restaurant. And when they were in having that restaurant in Kalkaska, they had a few employees, obviously. And one of the employees, his name is Margaret, and that's my birth mother. And I'm actually named after her, Mary, for Margaret. And Margaret grew up in Texas, kind of opposite of Ursula. Ursula's from Germany, the youngest of a large family. Margaret is from Texas, and she was the oldest of 10. And Margaret wasn't like Ursula, who liked to have social gatherings and have everybody come over and love being the restaurant owner and getting to talk to everybody in town. Margaret is very shy and reserved because she suffers from mental illness. She was actually schizophrenic, and so she spent time in and out of state mental hospitals. Margaret grew up in Texas and had actually wanted to become a nun and had gone to the convent school as soon as she finished eighth grade, but would always be sent home because of her mental illness. So it wasn't until she was 29 years old that she met a man by the name of Gail. Gail had some mental disabilities as well, but he was kind and very understanding with Margaret, so they got married and they moved to Kalkaska, and both of them at different times had worked for the restaurant owners, Ursula and Sarah. And they owned a small house outside of town, and one night, Margaret didn't come home like she normally does from work. Usually she would just walk. She didn't want to take rides. She didn't like strangers. And so Gail was starting to get a little bit worried. And he was debating about whether or not he should go, he didn't drive, so he thought, well, should I go ask the neighbor to take me for a drive to go look for Margaret? When she finally came through the door, and it had been very obvious that she had been assaulted, and she explained that she had been raped. Now, they tried to go to the police the next day to get help, and they started a little investigation, and I'm not quite sure what turned up with it. The relatives who explained to me what happened said no one was actually ever convicted for raping Margaret. And I always like to stop at this point to talk about rape. Rape is a traumatic occurrence, and it's not what the woman wanted to happen to her. And even though I know I'm alive because of that, I would never advocate that. I would never want anyone to have to go through that. But we do know that God can replace beauty for ashes, and that what man meant for evil, God can use for good. But oftentimes I hear people say that there's the one exception for abortion should be rape. I see that sometimes I'm on TV, I hear the politicians or the commentators talking about this pro-life issue, and they say, well, but except in the case of rape. I'm always like, hello, I'm here. What about in my case? Because what I really hear them say is, I'm pro-life, except in the case of Mary Rathke, you know, because she doesn't deserve life. And I understand, though, it's a confused compassion, because most of us have never seen a face, never put a face to the issue. And we think, well, but this woman's been traumatized, which she has been. But what we need to remember is that when a woman is raped, she doesn't need an abortion. She needs counseling for that traumatic event. A rape doesn't make the memories go away. It just ends my life. Excuse me, an abortion doesn't make the rape go away. It just ends my life. So what we need to do is make sure that she processes what has happened to her. She needs to go through those stages of grief and think clearly about what has happened. And those that rush to push an abortion on her are really ignoring her emotional needs. When I've gone to the marches in Washington, D.C., I've held up the signs that say, conceived in rape, I love my life. And I am so surprised by how many women come up weeping. And I vowed that I don't want to go again without bringing some of the counselors from my local pregnancy care center, because I'm there to make a statement and have 50,000 people hear my voice when I yell out, no exceptions, no compromise, I deserve life. But these women come up to me weeping, and they say, I was raped, and I had an abortion. You could be my daughter. I didn't know. I remember the one lady saying, I didn't know. And what we've done is we've added that baby to her heart forever. Not only does she have to have the shame of the rape, but now she has the guilt of killing a child. And so we can't be saying that we're pro-life, except in these cases. We are compassionate for the woman, we feel bad for her, but we need to have enough compassion to think about what is she going to go through 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when she looks back. In my case, abortion was never an option. Neither one of my mother, Margaret, or her husband, Gail, believed in abortion. But Gail wanted to protect my honor. So, as being Margaret's husband, he just told everybody in town that he was my father, and he claimed me as his own. When Margaret actually had me in the hospital, Gail didn't drive, and it was the bigger city where she was at, because they had a state mental hospital, and they had Margaret there. He asked the business owner, Ursula, will you please give me a ride so I can go see Margaret and the new baby? And of course, Ursula said yes. She'd love to. And so when they got there, they got to see me, and they got to see Margaret, and they said, well, Mary's okay, Mary can go home, but Margaret has to go back to the state mental hospital for a while for evaluation, because they thought that, you know, having a baby was traumatic for her. And so Gail, of course, with his mental disabilities, didn't think he could care for me, so he turned to Ursula and said, well, can you take Mary home? And of course, she was excited, even if it was just for a night. She'd already lost 4 of her children, 3 of her girls, tried to get pregnant time and time again, and thought, well, of course I'll take a baby home. And so he was happy that I was going to be cared for, and she was excited. And the only thing was, is nobody told her husband back home, Zara, that she was going to be bringing a baby home. I always say, well, what did he think was going to happen? You go to the shoe store, you come home with shoes. You go to the maternity ward, you come home with a baby. I mean, come on. So she thought, well, maybe I better call and forewarn him. And of course, this is before cell phones. So she had a friend in that bigger town that had just had little ones. And so she thought, I'll stop by there and get a few nappies and grab some bottles. And so she calls him up and she said, well, just so you know, I'm bringing a surprise home. And of course, what's his response? It better not be a baby. And of course, as soon as he took one look at me, he fell in love. I'm this cute even when I was a baby. Can you believe that? And it was a great restoration for both of them to have that baby in their life. But of course, they knew that Margaret was my mother. And for all they knew, Gail was my father. And they thought, well, this couple's had a baby. And they wanted to do what was right. So they worked with the state in trying to teach Margaret and Gail how to take care of me. At one point, Margaret actually moved in with them for a while to learn how to be a mother. One Thanksgiving, they dropped me off for the day, and they just got a phone call, and Gail was saying, the baby won't stop crying, we don't know what to do. So they left where they were at and went there, and they discovered all the bottles hadn't been used, my pants hadn't been changed all day. So Gail continued to call Ursula for about the first 2 or 3 years of my life to say, you need to come get Mary. And she said there were certain times when I was in rough shape just because she just didn't know how to take care of me. And so it wasn't until I was starting kindergarten, and they said I was actually the one that made a big deal about it. I'm going to start kindergarten, but my name is going to be different than yours. Because at that point, at 5, that's all I knew was my parents. I didn't remember being, you know, 1 and going back and forth, or being 2 and going back and forth. And so they went to Gail and Margaret, who had already given them legal guardianship, and they said at that point that, yes, they could legally adopt me. And it was a wonderful restoration, like I said, for Ursula. She had that girl again in her life. And for all you men out there, sons are wonderful. I have 2 sons. But I tell you, it's just not the same when you're getting ready to for even a wedding or for a dance. It's like, well, what are they going to wear? They know what they want to wear. Us girls, we get to go shopping, go look for the dresses. You know, whenever my husband and I go on vacation, when my mother's, she's been widowed now for a while, I'm always like, Mom, do you want to go with us? We're going to go to Niagara Falls. Mom, do you want to go with us? I'll take you to the Smoky Mountains. My brother goes out west and goes here and there and doesn't take her, and she's always like, your brother doesn't invite me. I tell you, I think sometimes us girls just have a special relationship, but for all you men who take your mom on vacation, kudos. But for my mom, she was very excited to have a girl in her life and to be a part of our lives and everything we've done together. And so it's been a wonderful situation. Now, adoption, though, sometimes can be depicted with Hollywood standards as something negative, that child's been abandoned. I always hear this, well, I couldn't give my baby away. And what I always try to let people know is, I wasn't given away, I was given a family. People who are adopted have been given a gift. I feel happy that I'm alive. I know that what people say about babies that have been conceived in rape or by babies that have been conceived by the mentally ill. There was a recent case in, I believe it was California, where a mentally ill woman was pregnant and the actual local government were trying to force an abortion on her because, of course, us babies that are born from mentally ill women aren't normal. We're deformed somehow. I don't know how that is, but that's what we hear. And so I'm just so thankful that I am alive, that my life mattered. And I had an open adoption. I always knew who they were because of the circumstances. And so I do advocate that for children. I think that as the age allows, if you can, tell them as much about the circumstance, and if that, especially if it's a young woman or somebody who's worried about what's going to happen, if they can receive pictures and kind of know what's going on, then it's no secret. There's no mystery. They were just given a better situation. In my case, I had 2 sets of wonderful parents. One set who cared for me, and another set who were wonderful superheroes who made the right decision when it mattered most. First of all, in giving me life, and second of all, for letting me have a family to raise me that could care for me. Growing up, I knew who they were, but I didn't spend a lot of time visiting with them. But as an adult, I have communicated more with them, and I've had an opportunity to connect with my family in Texas. And again, Margaret was the oldest of 10 children. And communication up to this point had always been on the phone or on the technology of Facebook. I get to see the pictures of my cousins, and I get to see everybody. But most recently, I just had an aunt and three uncles fly all the way here to Michigan from Texas just to meet me. And they said, you know, we never knew exactly what to do, but as soon as we had heard that Ursula and Zara were caring for you, they were, you know, still young, and they were just starting off with their children, they said, we didn't want you to ever feel like you weren't wanted. And they came all this way just to be able to give me a hug and say that they love me and that they're so proud of me. And so that was really special that I had a chance to meet them. Actually, it was Saturday. I just got to meet them all on Saturday, and it was wonderful. We got to go and stop and see Margaret, so she got to see her siblings that she hadn't seen in 40 years. So it was really, and she remembered them. Her oldest brother walked up, and she's like, Andrew, and I'm like, oh, I just couldn't get over the fact that even with her mental illness, she recognized him right away. So Gail passed away, though, a few years ago, and so when he was in the hospital, I was able to go in there and talk to him, and I got to hold his hand, and I got to look at him and say, thank you. Thank you for stepping up as my dad and making that decision when it mattered most. Because he could have been like, I don't want that kid. That's the rapist baby, right? That's what I've heard. I've received hate mail with that. You're just the rapist baby. It's like, no, I'm a child of the Most High God. People love me. I matter too. Every person should matter. And I was able to say thank you to him. And him passing away, knowing that I was just proud of him and his decision to support me and Margaret. As a mom, I told you I have four children, I've had to deal with this issue of life with my son Matthew. He's my oldest son, he's 15. Right away in the beginning of the pregnancy, I started spotting and having bleeding. And I went into labor actually at 27 weeks. I was in my second trimester. And I remember as soon as I started having problems, one of the options the doctors always give is, well, we could just end this. Well, what does that mean? Well, you know, you could have an abortion and just end this because, you know, babies that are born really little, a lot of times they have problems. I'd like to stop right here and say, what if my son was born and had problems? I have a nephew that was born at 3 pounds, 11 ounces, and he's legally blind, and he's a little bit developmentally slow, but his life matters. I take him on vacation with me, too. You should see us when we go on vacation. My husband, sometimes he doesn't go with me. I'll just stay home and watch the cat and dog. I'm like, all right, honey, he works hard. If you don't want to go, that's fine. But I'll bring my nephew along, and we have a great time, and the kids love him, and I love him, and his life matters. In my case, Matthew was born at 1 pound, 8 ounces, and they're so gracious to let me take the baby out of the display there. This is a baby at 26 weeks, but Matthew was born at 27, but he was a month behind in size, so he was actually a little bit smaller than this at 1 pound, 8 ounces. That's a life. He came out breathing. He came out, and his life matters. My doctor that took care of me while I was pregnant gave me that choice right away, and I made it very clear that, no, I want to fight for his life. And so when I went into labor, though, I had a different doctor on call, of course. It's not your doctor. Some new doctor doesn't know anything about your case. And I remember him coming in, and he said to me, well, you know, we could just let nature take its course. I was like, well, what does that mean? And mind you, I'm young. I'm 18 or 19 years old. I got married at 18. I'm now 19. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, well, you know, we'll just wrap him up in a blanket and you can hold him until he dies. And I remember thinking later, I wish I would have said to him, well, now, sir, if your appendix is about to burst, can we just let nature take its course? Let's just wrap you up in a blanket and let your relatives hold you until you die, right? That would be natural. There's no, like, surgical wards in the woods, you know. That's not nature. But yet, he wants nature to take its course for my child's life, but not for his life. It's interesting how unless you're fully grown and you're contributing, your life doesn't matter. I find that very interesting. So, of course, I didn't accept the negative reports. I said all life is worth fighting for. However he ends up turning out, I'll be proud of him. He'll be my son. He'll be a gift from God, which is what Matthew means. And Matthew, now he's a great role model. He's 15 years old. He's on the swim team. He's in the marching band. He's an honor roll student, and he's active in the youth group. And I'm so glad that I didn't just take on that attitude that society has tried to tell us, that some people's life is worth it and some people's life isn't worth it. Whenever I talk to my kids about these issues, I never say to them, if you get pregnant, I'll disown you. I've heard, you know, people say that to their kids, and I've actually volunteered and have been active in our local pregnancy care center. And what I find the most sad thing is that the girls who are usually the most likely to think about an abortion are the ones who are scared to tell their parents, or it's their parents forcing them to have an abortion. And we need to change this mindset that our kids have to be perfect, or they're going to get kicked out, or they're going to have this fear that they're going to be so disappointed in them. You know, I talk to my kids about abstinence, and I talk to them about waiting until they're married. But I also say if it happens, yes, I'll freak out. I'm a yeller by nature, so I'll probably yell and I'll probably scream, but I'll get over it, and we'll face it together. And if we choose to give that child a gift of a family, then we'll make that choice. But I'm not going to disown you, and you should never be scared to come tell your own mother. Because what do they go and do? They run to the Planned Parenthood or the abortion clinic, who promises that they won't tell your parents. And I always put it this way. My oldest is 15, but my youngest is 4. And I look at her and I say, don't run out in the street. Look both ways. But what would happen if her ball bounces in the street and she runs out and didn't look and she gets hit by a car? I wouldn't just walk up to her and say, I told you to look both ways. I told you that if you ran out in the car, you could get hit and you might die. Well, I guess you made your bed. You're going to have to lay in it now and turn around and walk away. No. I would scoop her up. I would get her to the hospital, and I would sit next to her bed until she has recovered. And we need to start this mentality with our young people that if you get pregnant, we'll support you, because the life is already there. If we believe that we're pro-life, we need to make sure that we're there for that life as well. So I educate my children. I talk to them about the issues. And I'm also surprised when I talk to friends and young people and I find out that they have no idea what partial birth abortion is or the voting records of other officials. You know, and many people tell me that we shouldn't talk about these issues. It's not polite. But speaking up has always been in my family. You see, my adopted mother, who grew up in Germany, in Nazi Germany, she tells us stories about how she'd be out in the fields and see the airplanes fighting each other and people parachuting out in the fields and hiding, you know, by rocks and being really scared as a young girl. And she was also shot by a Russian soldier who had come to town and was staying at their house because they had a nice place, and he was trying to force her on the bed. And she actually spoke Russian, so she knew what he was saying. But she was pretending like she didn't know in hopes that he would leave her alone. And so when she wouldn't succumb to his wishes to get on the bed so he could rape her, he pulled out his gun and she started to fight him and she got shot. And the other officials heard the shot go off and came in there and they left and left her for dead. So she's got lots of interesting stories, but my grandpa saw what was going on at the political party. He knew what they had changed in the school books and what they were saying about the Jewish people, and he knew it wasn't true. It wasn't their fault there was a depression. It wasn't their fault that they shouldn't own property. He had seen the transformation, and he couldn't stop his sons from being drafted into the army, and a few of them did die in the war. But when my mother had the opportunity after middle school to take two different paths, in Germany you have to take a test, and she could have gone on to be a tradeswoman, or she could have gone on for higher education. And because she could speak all these different languages, she was very smart, they wanted her to become a school teacher. And she was really proud that she had passed all her examinations. And he said, no. He said, he refused. He said, the history books have been changed. I've seen what these teachers are being taught in these schools. You're going to be indoctrinated in the Nazi way of thinking. And this was such an honor that the principal and her teachers at her school couldn't understand it. They didn't understand it. So they had a meeting, and he pounded his fist on that table, and he said, she will not go. Hitler has taken my sons, and he will not take my daughter. So she ended up going to learn how to become a seamstress. And we know that he would not remain silent. And I often ask people, if you had lived in World War II, would you have spoken up for the Nazi, for the Jewish people that the Nazis were hurting? Many people say they would. But yet, so many times we don't speak up. We don't give financially. We spend our money on other things. We don't see the fight. We don't understand what's really going on. I've been honored to be a part of some campaigns just here in Michigan with changing laws. And I'm so proud of Michigan. When I was in Italy, I got to tell everybody, I got to say, look, Michigan is the one state that has never passed a law that has had an exception for the rape case. Why? Because they recognize that my life matters. I've been in Lansing. I've seen what the lobbyists are doing. I've seen the influence they have. I've seen the voting records of those that get that endorsement. Many other states, they get the endorsement, but yet they'll vote either way. Michigan is very good about making sure that those that are voting and representing us understand that my life matters. And I'm so proud of representatives like we have here today, because our life does matter, and they understand that. But so many times, we just say we don't know what to do. But there are so many things we can do. We can volunteer. I'm sure they could use help tonight washing the dishes when we're all done here. I'm sure that we could get the flyers out. We could get the churches to be aware. I've gone and spoke at pastors' luncheons. And by the time, you know, talk to 10 pastors, and half of them call me up afterwards and say, please come speak. Now I'm speaking to 100 people each. So I'm speaking now to 500 people. And they're walking away saying, I had a confused compassion. I didn't realize that the money that we give today is changing the laws, and so there's a lot less abortion clinics out there today than there was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I know that one day I'm going to stand before God, and I'm going to say that I spoke up for the unborn, that I made a difference in my community, in my country, because what Michigan is doing is cutting edge for the world. They invited us from Michigan there for a reason, so we could get up and we could talk about how they can pass laws. In Spain, they had a petition go through with their people to pass a law. They had over 1 million sign it to say no abortion, no exception, for no reason. And it got before their government, and when they passed it, they put in a rape exception. And they didn't know what to do. And we said, well, when that's happened here in Michigan, and the left starts crying, but what about rape? We've got to be compassionate to the women. This is a war on women. They parade about 10 of us women up before the platform, and we say, we were conceived in rape. It's a war on us. I'm a woman. Why doesn't my life matter? And so when they hear us get up and explain what's happening here in Michigan, they're energized. They go back to their country, and now they know what to do. And it's because of dinners like this. It's because of the money that is raised one evening, once a year, in county after county in Michigan, that they're able to do this fight. So I used to say, and I just said, that Gail and Margaret were my superheroes when I was young, made that right decision. But now as an adult, you are my superheroes. You're the ones that are volunteering, getting the message out, and getting the money in so that they can pass these laws and make a difference. I was fortunate to be interviewed by an award-winning filmographer about my story. I know tonight you won't be able to see it, but tonight was the first time I got to see it. When I first came in, I got to sit down and I just started to cry. Because to me, it's just my life. I always say, it's not even my story. It's God's story. I'm just the lead actress in it. And my story touches people. And I don't understand it, I don't comprehend it, but I get the emails and I get the letters of women that say, I was raped, and I've been raising my son, and I thought I was all alone. because our society has made them to believe that they're the least of these. But what did Jesus say? When you give, when you take care of, when you do this for the least of these, you're doing it for him. So my challenge to all of you is, will we pound our fist on the table? And will we say that our girls matter? These baby and children that are conceived and raped, they matter. And we will support and educate and continue to help out the cause to make their lives legally protected in Michigan. I hope so. Thank you.